and we haven't had any issues, and they've been in now for a few weeks since before Thanksgiving.
Thank you, Nick.
All right, well, thank you.
Any other questions for Nick from the council? Any from the public? I see we have a question from Bill Houston. Bill, keep your questions polite. Bill? You're muted.
Oh, sorry about that. Yeah, Nick, I have a question about fire hydrants, specifically two of them in town that are covered in plastic bags. And I'm curious, does the fire department cover them in bags when they're no longer useful or out of service, or is that DPW?
No, that is DPW. They inform us when hydrants are out of service, whether it be because they can't get parts. If the whole hydrant's bad, they might not have hydrants. We don't know the exact reasoning why they take them out of service, except for there's a problem, and then we adjust accordingly. But that is not us that take them out of service. That is DPW.
Are you aware that the one of the fire hydrants, one that's on 4th Street, North 4th Street, has had a plastic bag on it or some semblance of a plastic bag for well over a year that's been out of service? Is that normal?
Jeez.
Again, it depends on, I think, parts and different things that DPW has to, the water department has to take into account. I do know that trying to get parts right now for just about anything is close to impossible. So, yeah, I mean, I'm not surprised, but that, you know, again, we adjust accordingly. We have enough hose to go to the next hydrant if ever need be.
Okay, thanks.
You're welcome.
Okay, thank you, Bill. Let's move on. Oh, wait, there's a question from Dominic Moranti, Councilman Moranti.
Thanks, Tom. Nick, just a follow-up. So when a hydrant's out, you guys have a plan in place anyway. So it's just because the hydrant's out of service doesn't mean you guys aren't aware and don't have a plan to accommodate that issue, correct?
That's correct. We would just go to the next hydrant. There, you know, some have two on every block. We just go accordingly. We have thousands of feet of hose on, you know, there's 1,200 feet on one engine. There's 2,200 feet on another engine. There's 1,000 on the rescue truck and 500 feet on the ladder truck. So we have plenty of hose to be able to get to where the next hydrant where we need to. So it's never a big deal if one's out of service for an extended period of time. We go to the next one.
But covered, it's probably proper at this time, so you guys don't waste time going to that hydrant finding out the hard way that it's not in service, correct?
Correct, and I believe the one on 4th Street is actually a part. I believe the bag may have ripped or whatever was over top of it over time, but it's clear that I know that one definitely is clear that it's out of service.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, we got that cleared up. Let's move to our next report from our youth department head, our youth superintendent, youth director, Liz York.
Can you guys hear me?
Yes, we can.
All right, I am going to try to share my screen for the first time ever in Zoom, so I apologize if I do it incorrectly. Here goes.
Oh, there you go.
Oh, look at that. All right. So when we're in person, I do these handouts. And then when we're not, and I'm usually pretty lackluster because I don't do anything visual. So I try my hand at this week. So here we go. All right. Some quick updates on how things have been going for community engagement. We were lucky enough to be part of Winter Walk this year. We got to bring some holiday cheer back to the city and the city hall. We got to play elves for the mayor, and we worked there with the Hudson Hall. We were able to have, we believe, over 100 kids and their families come in and meet Santa and get a gift. We did so with an extreme abundance of caution, you know, the one entrance, one exit, everybody masked, and it seemed like everybody really enjoyed themselves, and it was really nice to be a part of that. We also during winter walk, you were able to see a project that we got to work on with Suzanne Snyder of Oral History Summer School, and Rebecca Bohr helped with that. The presentation is still up at the Amtrak station, and the website is available to link to the project in its entirety. It's really a cool project where Oral History Summer School got some recordings of some local residents, a lot of Hudson residents, many of whom have worked for the youth department, and then the kids of the youth department took those oral histories and made visual poems out of them, and it was really cool. If you were lucky enough to see it displayed at Hudson Hall during Winter Walk, that was a really beautiful display, and we're really proud of the kids for that, so we're grateful to be a part of it. Same day, right before Winter Walk, Oakdale Beach was used by the Hudson Library, and we've been putting a lot of effort into making Oakdale presentable and usable this year. And it was nice to see a lot of people using it over the course of the seasons, and then to have the special event there, as well as the event that the Senior Center held. It was really exciting to have the opportunity to support and collaborate with these groups and be able to offer this site. So we're hopeful that we can continue doing this with the library and other community groups as well, just kind of reaching out and seeing how we can support doing different events. Also at Oakdale, the hillside on Glenwood has been kind of in transition for a long time. We finally, right before the frost came in, we were able to get some seeds down and get some straw mats over it. And so hopefully in the springtime, we'll have some blooms coming through, and this will be a beautiful kind of pollinator meadow there with all the flowers that come up. So in the meantime, it's going to look a little brown, but everything's a little brown in the winter. So hopefully in the spring we'll put down another layer of seeds and we'll have a nice little meadow there. So back at the youth center, we're still doing a lot of programming. We've talked about some of the other stuff, but we are finally able to get some pictures of what the Shaker Museum is offering. They're coming in and doing a free program where they're teaching our kids about weaving. This is really great because it, you know, it's really centering and grounding, works on fine and gross motor skills, and the repetitive nature of weaving is like calming and regulating. And it's really cool to see the kids create something that they didn't know or think they could create. And so we're excited to have them continue, and hopefully the kids will be able to finish their scars at the end of the program. We also continue to do our academic support for every participant. We encourage the kids to get out their books, we check for homework, help them do that. If they don't have homework assignments, we help them, offer them some reading time. We've been able to start communications with the school to figure out how to work more collaboratively with them. And we've got access to the portal so we can know what homework assignments have been given by what teachers so that we can support the kids if they forgot. And we're hopeful that we'll be able to further that relationship and work towards more collaborative endeavors in other areas in the future as well. So this one's a lot of words, and so I'm just going to read straight through. I'll probably ad-lib, because that's what I do, even though I worked hard to get the words down. So after having to limit participation twice in the last month due to potential COVID exposures, we adjusted our policies. I shared a little bit about them last meeting. Just a reminder of what we're doing. You know, the younger kids do come straight after school. We're not allowing any staff crossover between shifts or any student crossover either. When the kids leave at the end of the first program slot, we're wiping everything down, doing complete disinfecting of the whole center and any surfaces before we allow the second age group of kids to come in. And like I said, our staff aren't crossing over, so this helps to ensure that if we do have another potential exposure in one age group, we're not affecting the other age group and we're able to stay open and at least offer some programming. The unfortunate part of this is that we have had to stop access to the gym during this time. It's just an area where we can't keep the kids as safe. You know, it's hard to keep masks on. It's hard to do activities in that space where kids aren't on top of each other. So we've had to limit that. But we are looking at how we might be able to adjust the policies to allow more interactive and physical programming up there. However, at this point, there's a lot going on with the developments of the new variant and everything that's happening in terms of state regulations. And so we're just going to hold off a little bit while we get all the information before we make the decision. this page has some pictures of kids to kind of lighten the mood of COVID talk. We've also been talking with everything that's going on. We've reached out to the Department of Health, and we're hopeful that we'll be able to do a vaccine clinic at the youth center sometime in January. We're going to meet in, at the end of the month and discuss that. We're just hoping that having something at a location that's so central and so part of the community might be inviting to people that haven't been able to get to other places, and that we'll be able to support people getting the vaccines who have been unable to get them elsewhere. And so when we do have more information about that and our COVID policies, we'll share it on the city website and also on our social media pages as well. Almost done. We are also hiring. So we have several positions open for part-time rec attendants for both of our age groups. We're looking for responsible, passionate adults that are able to work with us part-time. We've got a 3-6 time block and a 6-9 time block. Again, like we just spoke about previously, those aren't overlapping, so it is just a nice short shift. But they are still pretty rewarding, and there's still a lot to do at the center. So if you're interested in learning more about the position, or you know someone who might be interested, to share Calvin's email address, assistantdirector@cityofhudsonyouth.org, so that they can reach out to us and we can set up some applications and some interviews. We are also going to be hiring for a couple full-time positions in the near future, and so I'll be sharing more about those roles soon on the city website and our social media as well, and definitely at the next meeting. And then this is just some photos of the kids, because they're always nice to look at, and it's nice to have them in the building and be doing programming, even though things are really uncertain right now. So that is my presentation. If you have any questions, let me know.
Thank you. Is that your cat, Liz?
The rhythm program have.
Go ahead, Tiffany.
How many children participate in that program?
They only have 7 looms that they can bring, so 7 kids participate.
Who's teaching that program?
A volunteer from the Shaker Museum. Her name is Susie, and I forgot her last name. She drives up, she brings all the materials, she brings the looms, the yarn, and she comes as a volunteer to help teach that lesson.
And what have the children made so far?
So far, they haven't completed any projects. She's been able to come twice because of the shutdowns, and so they've started making scarves, but nobody has completed a project yet.
Are there any, the program, is it participated with boys and girls?
Yeah, we've got boys and girls in that program making the scarves.
Good. Encourage the children to make enough to sell.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Thank you.
If they get really into it, it would be worth maybe having some on site all the time if they can learn the skill. So.
Yes, and they can sell, become their own little entrepreneurs. Thank you,
Tiffany. Malachi has a question.
Hey, Liz, how you doing?
Good, how are you?
I'm good. Just a quick question about the employment. What age does that start?
We can have staff as young as 16. We do ask that they're able to make a commitment, so we have struggled to have staff that are younger commit to working. But for the older age group, for the 6-9 time slot with the kids that are older, it is helpful to have adults out of high school to work that shift, since they are working with high schoolers.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Liz. Are there any other questions from council members? Any question? Rebecca.
I was just curious, Liz, where do you post the jobs? Like, how do you spread the word about the jobs?
In the past, we just used our Facebook page, and that was how we got the word out for our last round of hiring. We're going to share the job openings with the city to put on the city website. We're going to share them on our social media, Facebook and Instagram, mm-hmm. and then word of mouth, hopefully. We are in the process of finalizing our youth department website, so that can be a resource, but it probably won't be ready in time for this round of hiring.
Thank you, Liz. Bill Houston has a question.
Yes. Hi, Liz. I often wondered why the youth department has a Facebook page. I mean, I know a lot of kids are on it, but we all know that not everybody uses Facebook. And given what's come out recently about how damaging Facebook is to children, that we found out, you know, Facebook knows all about, has known about this for years and years and hidden it. But now I'm just wondering if you're comfortable with the Hudson, your department still having a Facebook page.
I mean, the hope is once we get the website going that we no longer need to use the Facebook page. The reality is that if we don't have some type of presence in the meantime, we won't have a real line of communication with the families. We do have a lot of parents that rely on that page for a resource. So ideally we move away from Facebook. We have our own website. We have all the information there. In my mind, I think it's just an interim device to communicate.
Thank you, Liz.
So I'm curious, you're hoping to have your own site, not just a page, a web page?
I am not creating it. We're working with Unity Now and Shaheem to help create it. So I believe it is a website, and I do not know enough about technology to even understand the difference. So,
well, Liz, thank you, because you're getting the communication out, and that's what's most important. And as you stated, that's what parents rely on, and we want to make sure that the parents get to see what's going on and see the opportunities that's happening, that they can communicate with their teenagers about job opportunities that's coming about.
Even if Facebook is damaging our children?
Even if Facebook, everything is damaging.
Oh, please.
And everything Bill? Is damaging. Bill. Thank you. Oh, please. Thank you.
Okay, moving along. Maya, did you have anything you'd like to add?
No, thank you, Liz, for your comprehensive report.
Thank you.
I did have one more thing I wanted to say. I'm sorry to take up everyone's time. So I know that there isn't one more formal meeting, but this is our last informal meeting with this generation of the council. And so I just want to say thank you to everybody who is on the council, who's been with me since I started, who's been here even before I started, who might be moving on next year. I know that personally, we didn't get off to a great start, but I appreciated the relationships that I was able to create with a lot of you, and working with you was great. I appreciated it. So thank you, and good luck if you are moving on. And to the rest of you, I'll see you the next meeting.
Thank you, Liz. Moving right along, is Robin here? Or...
Hello.
Oh, there you go. Robin Waters, the... Commissioner for Seniors. I'm making those announcements just because our new attorney is here, and I want her to understand who everyone is.
Okay, great. Thank you. So we were able to hire a clerk, a full-time clerk, which started a couple weeks ago, but that makes the center now open Monday through Friday, 9 to 5. So we have been able to bring back some of the programs that we had before that we weren't able to have virtually. So like Dan Rupp's painting class, that's been quite popular over the years, has started up again. So it's on Wednesdays now from 12 to 3. We also have a new program that started today, creating memory books. So that's going to be ongoing on Mondays from 12 to 2. And we're just trying to balance out the opening up of the center with the COVID protocols. As of now, we are, you know, asking everyone to be masked and fully vaccinated. And, you know, we're seeing if we need to make any changes based on the numbers that are being reported in the county. So we are watching that closely and making any changes that may need to be made. But right now we're just opening up, and we have a few participants in each program, so they are spaced out enough that it is safe. The BEA did approve for the seniors department to have a director, so we are starting to canvass for that process. And we are going through civil service with the list. That information will be on our website, and also on our Facebook page. So those are the updates for now, if anyone has any questions.
Thank you. Any council members, questions?
I guess, Robin, it's Ryan. My only question is, has there been any trend down in attendance or anything with the colder weather? And is that typically an impediment on seniors being able to get to the center and whatnot? Is there anything we can do as it gets colder and the weather gets worse to help you all out to make sure that they still have access to what they need?
Thank you. It's been a fairly mild winter so far, so that hasn't come up. I think the aerobics class was happening at the waterfront. They were outside all winter last year. There was a debate within the class. There were some people who wanted outside, some inside, but they did move back inside. And in terms of people being able to get there from the weather, we haven't seen that as an issue yet, but possibly. Normally the food programs, both at Salvation Army and then at the county meal program on North 7th Street, they will close down in inclement weather. So, and we do try to adjust with Meals on Wheels to get people their meals. So we do try to make those accommodations, but I appreciate you asking that question in case it does come up as the weather gets colder and more inclement. So thank you.
Robin, what happened last year when this what happened pertaining to Ryan Wallace's question to you? What did you do last year?
Last year, the center was primarily closed because we had virtual programming, so it wasn't so much of a concern for last year. But
pre-COVID.
Pre-COVID was, let's see, I only had January and February of 2020. That was pre-COVID. So we didn't have, nothing was in place at that point.
So typically it's closed. That's what you're saying.
No, I'm just saying last year, or from March of 2020 until December of 2021, it was closed to in-person programming because of COVID. And then the staffing issues.
So how are you preparing for, just in case transportation is needed, if it does snow, rain, whatever the situation may be, what are you relying on now for transportation?
Well, right now we're not concerned about it since that hasn't happen yet, and people are able to get to our programs or walk to their programs in the weather that we've had. When there was snow on the waterfront, the instructor would bring a shovel and actually shovel some of the snow. They were not easily deterred by the weather. A lot of the people participating, like people participating in aerobics, can generally get around. They're fairly mobile, so that's why I mentioned the food programs, because the people attending those are not as mobile as some of those in our exercise programs, just generally speaking. So those we try to work out deliveries.
Any other questions? Oops. Any other questions? Okay. Thank you, Robin.
Thank you.
Next presentation is from our treasurer, Heather Campbell. Are you here somewhere?
I am.
Oh, there you are. Okay.
And I'm just going to share my screen.
Okay.
Okay. I actually meant to delete the ARPA bullet point because it's nothing new from last year. So it's just about, they keep kind of changing the goalposts in terms of reporting requirements and deadlines. So it's just important to keep an eye on that and make sure that we're meeting those obligations. Mm-hmm. Been talking a fair amount about an accrual policy. We did finally get a draft version from our attorney. There are a number of different issues to be addressed slash resolved. So we've been trying to set up a meeting with, I believe, both Tom and Kamal to review some of the options. Hmm. So hopefully, I'm not sure if we're going to be able to get it completed by the end of the year, but it'd be certainly nice to start 2022 with something solid in place. We are still working on the audit. There's still a few outstanding things that we're working on. Again, as most people know, the ideal is to have it filed by the end of the year. Right now, I still think we're on track to make that happen. And obviously, once the audit is completed, I will reach out to the council and ask if they would like to have that presented either by the auditors or by myself so that everybody's got an idea of the clear fiscal picture. There's been a couple major changes, not in terms of the data, but in terms of, yet again, how the powers that be have decided how we should report things. So that's caused quite a bit of turmoil in trying to get clarity, both from the auditors, as well as the municipalities trying to get clarity from GASB, which is the Government Accounting Standards Bureau. So that's one of the reasons why it's been taking so long. There's still outstanding questions in terms of how certain things need to be recognized. I swear, I think they just do it to keep themselves in business. Last month, we talked about working on both the Tourism Board Reconciliation and Planning Board Escrow. Those are both complete at this point. I've been in touch with Ryan Wallace as the chair and with Mike Tucker at CDC for his portion of that. I think we're in good shape and we all understand where we are. We'll make all the adjustments we need to make in terms of the amount that's come out of the reserve fund, the amount that we're recognizing as expenditures in 2021. And we have approved what the 2022 budget is that's been assigned to the Tourism Board, which is $30,000. They will have that. Based on my assessment, and I think there might be one or two things still outstanding, they will have approximately $28,000 left in the actual reserve fund at the end of 2021. But as a reminder, they still need to come forward to the council to request any or all of that money and how it should be spent. I'm keeping the new tax collection software up here in perpetuity because at some point we're going to need to do it. Especially if our collection software keeps crashing as it has been. But resolutions, we talked about a couple of them already. As Tom mentioned, the last bullet point is for the central firehouse electrical repairs. So that you should have in front of you today. There's another one for me, just in terms of the New York State and local retirement system. Everything's based on initially projections and then estimates and then the final invoice that all come from the retirement system. They tell us ultimately what we have to pay. It gets a little confusing, a little unpredictable is a better way of putting it, because they work on a different fiscal year than the city does. So we have to make an estimate based on a very early projection from them to determine what the budget requirements are. And then, you know, many months later, they finalize their number and they tell us. We're a little short, but I found money to cover it in other places in the 2021 budget. So that's what that's all about. And then you're going to see three different resolutions tonight, and then a fourth one, which I was not able to complete in time for tonight, in terms of the NYPA LED streetlight conversion. It's a project we've been talking about for a long time. We're finally back on track with it. So you're going to see three different ones. One is going to be the authorization of the authority to proceed. That basically allows the mayor to say, we're going to go forward with the first phase of this. There's going to be a separate one. That should say MCRA, which is the Master Cost Recovery Agreement. What that basically means is what we're doing is we're going into an agreement with NYPA, and the first phase of that is planning and design. In the event that we go forward with the planning and design, which we have every intent of doing so, the money that is the money that was spent on that design process gets rolled into the bigger project. To the extent that the city, for whatever reason, decides that it does not want to go forward with the project, we owe a percentage of those expenditures caught to date. So that's what the MCRA is. You're also going to see a bond resolution, and I just want to clarify for that. So, you know, we're talking about approximately a $1.1, $1.2 million project here. but with a break even of less than 10 years, and then the costs go down substantially. NYPA itself does offer financing both for the short-term design process and also for the longer-term 10-year span of, you know, basically paying for this work. My belief right now is that we can get a better rate on the bond market than we can through NYPA. We don't have to make that decision today, but the reason why it's important to have the bond resolution authorized is once we have the bond resolution authorized, any expenditures that we incur can be paid back out of the proceeds of the bond. But the bond resolution has to be in place before we can do that. And so obviously there's no reason we would want to undertake funds that could not be reimbursed by the financing. So it does not mean that we are necessarily going to issue a bond for it. It may be because obviously we have to do an entire financial analysis and a comparison of the different financing opportunities. We have to do that by law, and we will do that before we enter into phase two. But it's important to have this in place now, because if we do go with bond financing as opposed to financing through NYPA, we want to be able to recoup all of the expenses that the city has paid to date on that project. The last resolution, which I will have for you at the formal, is that right now, at least, my belief is that the best way to fund the design component of this project, rather, NYPA will offer financing for that as well. I believe we have the capacity to loan from the general fund to the capital fund in order to avoid those interest costs. I just need to double check some numbers because, you know, after COVID, our cash flow has been a little different, and I just want to make sure that we can do that without an issue, but I'm 99% positive that we can, which will obviously save the city some money, and I'll just make sure that that is in place before Tuesday's meeting.
Okay.
I see Rebecca's hands up. Tom, I don't know if you'd like me to go through all of this or take questions throughout.
Let's wait till the end.
Okay. So the rest of it's pretty quick. It's just sort of the same numbers that we've been looking at over the course of time. So our parking revenues, you can see we're pretty much in line in terms of what our budget was versus actuals, not in every specific line, as we've talked basically for the last year about. The Front Street Municipal Lot has dropped considerably. It's come back a little bit, but not nearly as much as we might have hoped. But it's offset by some other things, particularly parking tickets. So it's been the same story pretty much for the last 4 or 5 months. We're at about 92% of year to date, 90% versus budget. So the budget number itself looks good. We should be good in that standpoint. It's just how it's distributed among those different revenue lines. And then if we look at the year-to-date comparison, which is the second chart that shows where we were in 2020 versus 2021 just through November, as opposed to compared to the entire budget, you can see that we are quite a bit higher than we were in 2020. So that 41% is actually 41% higher. As you can see, we're at 628, whereas in 2020, we were at 445. But you can also see that the year before Front Street, we were at 244,000 at this point in 2019. We were only at 85,000 at this point last year, and we're only at 97,000 year to date in this current year. So that's a pretty significant drop, almost $150,000. And we're not seeing it getting recouped particularly quickly. On the other hand, you can see that parking tickets also dropped in 2020. It was 225 through November of 2020. We're already at 378, which is also higher than budget. But you can see in 2019, we were actually at 314. So we're doing even better in 2021 than we did in 2019. So that's a bright spot there. Building permits and fees, we're looking good there. Both of them are over budget at this point and over a year ago. And nothing has changed on the sales, mortgage, and lodging tax revenues from last month, but I'm keeping it here just so we keep an eye on it. And just as a reminder, we're at 70% versus budget of sales tax, but that's only with 2 out of 4 payments recorded. So that number is going to look strong. And as you all know from reviewing the 2022 BEA recommended budget, we were pretty aggressive in our 2022 sales tax revenue estimates based on this. Mortgage tax, again, continues to be strong, and lodging tax is doing fine versus budget. And that's what I've got for today.
Thank you. Rebecca, you have a question.
Oh, yeah. This was just about the tax collection software. I remember we spoke about it last month, and I don't remember what exactly, whether there was any conclusion, but just I wanted to just bring it up again. The Munirevs service that they offer, which is part of the package that they usually sell and which we didn't opt into, but they're our agreement with them offers some kind of a like reduced fee for their tax collection services because we have purchased the rest of the services. So I just wanted to remind you of that.
Yes, understood. And as we talked about last month, one of the challenges is we have some very specific requirements that they do not currently have the capability to provide.
Mm-hmm.
So unfortunately, that's not an option for us in terms of the tax collection side.
I remember that now. And I guess that was so they are also like all about customization. You know, the person who developed the company is a city, she comes from a city tax background, like that she was a tax, you know.
The treasurer, I think, yes.
The treasurer, yes. So the company is all about sort of like tailoring to different needs. So I just really suggest that, you know, at least have some kind of like really serious conversation with them about that.
Yeah, we'll definitely reach out to them again. In addition to the specific capabilities we need, there's also an issue of being able to port the historical data. So that would definitely be a conversation that would be interesting to have with them. Mm-hmm. And we will make sure we do that in early 2022.
Right on. Thanks.
Okay. Anybody else on the council? The public, any questions? I don't see any hands. Oh, wait. Oh. Bill Houston.
Yes. Hey, I have a question, Heather, about the lodging tax registration that you have. And I had suggested that it would be nice if it could get organized in some fashion, either alphabetically or by street. Do you think that's going to happen?
Yeah, it's absolutely going to happen. As I responded back to you, I thought all the suggestions were very good. I just, you know, I have to apologize, but I literally, my entire department is 2 people. I've been down 50% of my staff for over a quarter of a year at this point. We just got somebody hired in the last 2 weeks, and obviously there's a huge amount of effort to get them onboarded just in terms of the regular day-to-day operations. So unfortunately, that has not been a significant priority. But I will absolutely make sure it gets done. And I know I also told you that if you were interested in finding specific addresses, you can either use Control Find or the whatever the Apple Flower thing is called. I don't know. And that will help you at least narrow down to the addresses. But I think all the ideas were really great. It's just we're just very far behind the eight ball right now, and I do apologize for that.
Yeah, totally understand.
I will commit to getting that done by the end of this fiscal year.
Okay. I'm just curious, how often will the list be updated? Do you know?
I don't know. I believe the last time we spoke about this, I suggested every quarter.
Okay. All right, thanks.
Rebecca, you're muted.
Thanks. I did just want to make sure that everybody in the listening audience, including the council, knows that the sunset period for the short-term rental legislation that we passed has ended. And so the law is in effect now. And And an important thing to know is that on the mayor's website, I mean, I'm sorry, on the page of the mayoral page, like if you go to the city website and you go to the mayor's department, the last thing on the menu there is an online complaint form, which is specifically for residents and anyone else, but, you know, residents to complain or report properties that are not in compliance so that they can be brought into compliance. And that's the purpose of the company that we have hired, is to facilitate that and help the treasurer's office and any other staff to make sure that that happens. So hopefully that will produce lots of revenue for the city.
Okay.
As well as
Thank you, Rebecca. Heather, can you take your screen down, please? There we go. Okay, I don't see any other questions. We'll move right along to Chief Moore. Chief Moore, are you frozen? Oh, boy.
There we go. Can you hear me, Tom?
Yes, we can.
Let me tell you, Tom, these Zoom meetings are, these summer meetings are not as festive as they used to be. A couple things for everybody. Hello, everybody. Good evening. We did our mandatory reporting, park committee reporting about review of body cameras to the mayor, and that's been submitted. I have submitted the statistical monthly report to, I've sent emails to you, Tom, for distribution. Not very remarkable this month. I'll go over them. We did not have any for the month of November. We did not have any use of force incidents. Hence, there was no duty to intervene situations. We made 21 arrests over the month, which is a little below average. And we had 12 calls for emotionally disturbed people, which is also slightly below our average. We thankfully had no calls for any drug overdoses this month, hence we had no use for Narcan. So pretty good month statistically. I went over the arrests. There was a couple felony assaults. Of the 21 arrests, 10 were felonies, but not one particular category of crime that seemed to be trending. We did make a vandalism arrest on Winter Walk after Winter Walk, which was responsible for a lot of the graffiti we see in town, because all the graffiti seems similar. So hopefully, if we get some of this graffiti cleaned up, we can hold the person responsible who's done it, or we allege has done it. On the 23rd, we're addressing our manpower issue. On the 23rd, we swore in a new officer who will begin the police academy, Zone 5 in Albany, next month. The good news is that we put a big effort back in the fall for local police officer testing. That list is being established right now. It's being canvassed, so we'll have a new list of potential police officers here within the next couple weeks. And I'm told that there are local Hudson residents on that list that can be interviewed. So that's good. It means that maybe our efforts for recruiting might have been successful. The command staff of the department went on a three-day convention of police officers, specifically addressing the use of force and the newest laws and policies regarding the use of force. Very important subject today. It carries over from the last discussions over last year. So very important training and very useful. Right now, the department is engaged in preparation for pretrial hearings for a homicide trial that's coming up. The investigation involves many members of our department, so we're working hard on that. As we prepare for that. Also, a very nice thing happened a little over a week ago. ShopRite donated, I'd say, a huge amount of COVID supplies to include hand sanitizer, soap, and disinfecting wipes. We have so much of it. It's enough for this department, enough for any city department that might need some. But we've also invited the public. If anybody needs these kind of supplies, they're welcome to come to the station, and we'll give them what we can. But that's so much, we had to store it off site. So it's quite a bit of stuff, and hopefully will get us through the next COVID wave or surge or whatever. We expect, speaking of COVID, given the governor's new orders effective on the 13th, we're looking to put into place again some heightened policies to protect our department. We've been very fortunate through this whole thing to always maintain a patrol, to try to restrict overtime the best we can. And I'm very happy with the way we've come through it. So as we approach the finish line here, we don't want to fall backwards. So we expect some new, more stringent COVID policies to go in very shortly. Other than that, I'm good right now, Mr. President.
Okay, thank you, Chief. Any council members have questions for Chief Moore? Rebecca Wolf.
Hello. So this question is about, it's a general question, but it pertains to something that happened last month in the First Ward. There was an incident at the terraces in which a person, there was a report that there was that somebody had a weapon, and the SWAT team came, and there was a lot of activity, and a person was apprehended, and the question that I have is about the relationship, it's about how does the news, so there was a photographer present at the terraces who took a photograph of the person being apprehended and put it on the front page of the newspaper with, a write-up of the incident. And in this incident, as it turned out, there was a warrant for a search, and there was no weapon found in that search. And my question really is, what happens to the information for the public that there was no weapon found in that search? And how does that news get out? Because it seems to me, I guess I'm really asking, how does the photographer end up on the scene right then? I mean, I'm assuming they're listening to the police dispatch or something like that. I really don't know, but I guess that's my big question. And then the follow-up is, and in what way can the police department be involved in, I suppose it would be like a press release or something like, oh, looks like there was no weapon. something like along the lines of that.
So as you know, what used to appear in the BOP and a police blotter is public record. So the press and public has access to that. I'm going to pretty much assure you that in a small city like this, when there's a lot of commotion like that, it doesn't take any prompting by us to get a photographer or a reporter there. And the folks listen to the scanner and things like that. That's their job. Don't really have a comment on that, but we certainly don't alert press or photographers or individuals on something like that. We try to make the press releases factual and concise, and just basically report what happened, what the situation was. I think your question should probably be more directed towards the press and their handling of these kind of things. What happens, we do a press release and there's something not factual on it, we'll certainly get called on it. I know that case is still open, and that's best I can answer, Rebecca.
Thank you, Chief. Dominic has his hand up.
Chief, just wondering, can you give a brief update, if there is one, regarding, you know, the calls for service for EMS? You know, is at one time it was almost three times, four times a week. Is there a slowdown with the changing of weather? Has that diminished a little?
Well, Thanks, Dominic. I think folks, citizens of Hudson, recognize that the situation specifically in the park has been alleviated the last couple of weeks. I'm not going to get into specific names, but several of the people that were routinely in the park and then subsequently the people calling EMS routinely, one individual was something like nine times in 1 week. Some of those people have found their way into the proper treatment areas and are no longer in the park. And I think that's in general alleviated, and not even in general, specifically, it's alleviated the EMS calls at least for 1 month here in Hudson. As it gets, our concerns, of course, is it getting colder. And I will tell you that a couple of the individuals that were demanding EMS calls are now in facilities that are caring for them. So that's an improvement.
That's great.
Yeah. But not a solution, you know, we're still working on stuff, working on a field team and working on facilities and things like that. But we got through this month, this cold month, so on to the next.
Okay, any other council members? Bill, you're up next, but remember, when you get an answer, be satisfied with that answer, please. Bill?
Sorry about that. Yeah, Chief, I'm following up on two things, two issues related to the Maker Hotel at 3rd and Warren that you should be aware of. One being that they posted a stop sign in the alley, and you've told me on two occasions this year that you would take care of it, and it's yesterday or the day before, and it's still there. Just wondering, is anybody allowed to put a stop sign in, up in town?
Can you hear me, Bill? Okay. Yeah, the sign was taken down once and has mysteriously reappeared. I will personally attend to that. Apparently, the story was that they had put the stop sign there for their delivery people. Remember, they're having an issue with the Maker delivering on North 3rd Street. Mm-hmm. So what they did is they encouraged
I understand, Chief. My time is short here. Okay. They're not allowed to have the stop sign there. Is that correct?
Correct.
So who took it down the first time?
One of my officers.
And did you talk to the manager to say that's just not allowed?
Yes, and I have too.
And so there's no consequence for them for putting back the sign?
Not right now. We will go back and we'll address that. There was an explanation why they put it there. So,
but they're not allowed to have it, so there's no explanation. There can be no explanation.
Well, there's sometimes...
So in front, they also have two signs that say parking for guests only in two metered spaces at the corner. And as I understand it, first of all, they've been there for over a year. And as I understand it, they do not have a permit or permission to have those signs there. Is that correct?
I will find out if they have a permit or not.
Well, I foiled for the permit from you and from DPW over a year ago, and I got nothing in return. So I'm telling you, they have no permit for this. And it's frustrating for me to continually remind City Hall that those signs are not supposed to be there. Perhaps they were allowed to have them for the seasonal use this year. But that is over, and no hotel is allowed to keep, especially metered spaces in Hudson for their own use. And I wish somebody would attend to this.
Okay. Bill, real quick, when you said you foiled to see if they had a permit and got nothing, do you mean you got no response or that they did not have a permit?
DPW and HPD had no permit on file for them to have this sign. Now, my last question is still with parking. There's now 12 parking by permit only signs in this City Hall municipal lot. You're aware of those?
Yes.
Can you talk, what's going on there? Who are those for?
I'll have to check who applied and who has them, Bill. But I don't know off the top of my head. It's 12. I don't know who's got them.
They're mostly for employees and...
Employees of what?
Yeah, Tom, I actually talked to Tracy about this today. Bill, it's Ryan. I can give you a little bit more about this. So
can I, Ryan, before you start, Chief?
Yes.
Still there. You're the parking guy, right?
No.
So you should know about this.
No.
I don't know that I'm the I don't know that I'm the parking guy.
But the parking bureau doesn't do anything with signs.
Bill.
Okay.
So it's a couple of things, Bill, and it relates to a few things that you sent emails about this week. The first thing I want to address is the parking meters. So as just like Nick Pirro from the fire department was sharing earlier, getting meters right now is extremely tough, especially some of the replacement parts. So what's been happening when there have been meters within the city themselves, the city has looked to say, okay, what spots aren't as revenue generating as others. So they've been taking meters from certain areas, particularly within that lot, to replace them in areas within the city and other municipal lots that are actually higher traffic venues, particularly during the weekdays. I'm not talking about Saturdays when, you know, Hudson goes nuts for parking. That said, rather than try to wait around and have broken meters all over the place, which I know you've emailed us very frequently about, the decision was made to switch some of those spots over to monthly permit as well as city employee permit parking. The monthly permit, if somebody wants to pay it, guarantees revenue is coming into the coffers of the city. So that was a decision actually executed, I believe, Tom, by the clerk's office in conjunction with DPW to sort of best use what we have to spread around so that metered parking can still be running functionally in some areas, and that we're not technically losing out on the revenue and what we've got in the lot behind City Hall.
So somebody can buy a permit to park in the municipal lot there on Columbia Street?
Yeah. You can buy monthly parking permits for a few of the lots across the city. Right. All that information's on the city website.
Has anybody bought any for those spaces yet?
Yeah. Linda Fenoff just raised her hand.
Okay.
She is too.
Bill,
how many more spaces?
Okay, moving right along. Thank you, Chief. Any other questions for the Chief?
No, okay. Just a compliment quickly, though. Thanks for everything that you and the team did for Winter Walk, by the way. You guys were visible, you were out, and I know a lot of people appreciated it. So thanks, Chief.
We appreciate that. And to just last to sum up Bill's concerns, if you're ever traveling through Winsted, Connecticut, and stop at a particular establishment, you'll see one of our parking meters hung on the wall as an antique piece. So someday we'll get down to business and look at kiosks, modern kiosks, and parking enforcement kind of topics, which I think we can improve on, and also at the same time improve parking safety and revenue. So it'll be something I'd be willing to work on with folks, but the days of the nickel and the meter and stuff are like Andy Mayberry getting kind of old, so might be time to update. But I appreciate Bill's comments and wish everyone happy holidays.
Thank you, Chief. I am sort of curious, who plays Barney Fife in your office?
Me, most of the time.
Moving right along. Rob, are you here? There you are. Rob Perry. Who is our superintendent of public works?
Right?
There you go.
Okay. So, Sector's revenue for we continue to exceed our forecast on that revenue side, which is a very good thing, not just because it's technically a good thing, but also this year we've been plagued with a lot of pump and motor replacements. Significant repairs. You know, the plant cost $12.5 million and we built it 10 years ago, and now everything is 10 years old. So we did have a lot. So we're going to need to do some kind of a transfer from the sewer fund balance. Good news is it's a healthy fund balance to get through the year, but I just think it's hopefully we didn't have any big repairs in December, knock on wood. We have a planning grant, which was awarded to us early summer. You know, it was funny because EFC, Environmental Facilities Corporation, was the one that gave us the award, and they were all hot and heavy to have us have all our paperwork in. They said we had a November deadline. We actually had everything in July or August, and we've been waiting on them to approve our MWBE plan ever since August. So it's still a hurry up and wait game at this state of New York. just to go over, this is something that a lot of people may, oh, I guess nobody really knows, would you? Okay, so every year we put out, you know, we use a number of chemicals as the treatment processes to our water and sewer plant. This Perfloc 423 is a polymer. It's a thickening agent that's used down at the sewer plant to thicken the sludge as part of the dewatering process. So these, all the other ones are out of the water. And, you know, these are essential to the water treatment. And, you know, we expect prices to go up. But this year we put out the bid and some of these went up a huge amount. I mean, you can see sodium permanganate, 13%, zinc, sodium, that's part of an oxidizing agent that, you know, starts our pre-treatment out in Churchtown. The zinc orthophosphate is corrosion control. That's something that, because we still have a lot of cast iron mains in the system, so it helps prevent the water from reacting with the metals in the mains. Sodium hydroxide is a buffering agent used to correct pH, also helps with corrosion control. This one here, sodium hypochlorite, which went up by 77%, that's the chlorine disinfectant that is required by our, you know, obviously to keep residuals in there so that way the, you know, any kind of biological, microbiological things can't start growing in the water. PAC is a thickening agent, a coagulant, and Superfloc enhances that coagulation process. And that's basically to take all the schmutz that's, you know, kind of microscopic, turns it into big clumps of schmutz. It's easier to remove from the process, if that's a technical term. You know, some of these products, we use a barrel or two a month, and something like sodium hypochlorite, you know, we use 20 gallons a day. And, you know, so this one price increase alone is $6,000 a year. We're gonna go through some materials and supplies accounts pretty quickly in the chemical treatment at the water. And just to give you an idea, just so that I know there's a lot of chemistry talk there, but right here on the right, this is what water looks like when we use the chemicals, and on the left is what this is the raw water coming in from Churchtown. This is what it looks like, you know, when it's all the crud that's in there and that we take out. So it's kind of important to the process. We did have the water infrastructure improvement for Washington Street and the lab service line. You know, we did get some comments back from DOT or Department of Health, which we responded to, and we that's satisfactory. So we're getting ready to put that bid out on the street next month in January, hopefully to start this project in April-ish. Get it done midsummer and get this project underway. There's just a couple other things. We had a water break here on North 3rd Street. And so this is just the sleeve. We're getting into the season. It starts to get a little cooler out, you know, puts a little pressure. This is an older main here. In this instance, an individual was texting while driving and ran over the sign and then clipped the hydrant. The hydrant itself has what's called a breakaway flange. So they're actually designed to break at this sacrificial part that's right here. And then we just replace that part and put it back together. So, you try to keep the hydrant the large project we did this past month, obviously our paving project, we do this every other year. The reason why is it's extremely taxing on all of the departments. It takes, we started this process 6 months ago, and just between preparing the streets, identifying the streets, preparing them, going through the contractual process, putting the bid documents together, notice to proceed, all those things, it just takes a lot of time and a lot of effort. So in this instance, I used the 2019 pricing, and I came up with an estimate of about $650,000. The actual prices are probably about $100,000 more, about $750,000. This is CHIPS, is Community Highway Improvement Program. It's a DOT project, so these are funds are 100% reimbursable through DOT. What I did want to show you is that, you know, we did a bunch of ADA ramps. I think I estimated about 40, 41. In 2019, they were $4,700 each. This year, they were $5,700 each. So, there's a lot, you know, you've got a third of the paving project was actually ADA ramp. You know, just to go through some of the processes, you know, there's, as the blacktop gets put down, we have to uncover the water valves and sewer manholes and put risers in there, and the roller comes and pushes everything up against it nice and neat. Here's Prospect Street with milling on one side, base on the other. This is also Prospect Street on the south side with the second coat. Back a couple months ago, I showed you how we rebuilt this. So, you know, we rebuild the infrastructure, then we put a whole new road around it, and this should be good for, you know, a couple of decades, hopefully. Just milling on 2nd and Columbia, more Prospect Street. This has got the top coat on the right side and liner only on the left, ready for the next pass. I don't have the final numbers yet. We're still trying to get the crosswalks put down by the contractor. It's just, you know, it's tough to get things on any kind of schedule. But other than that, I should have like a 98% estimate as to what. So I will have a resolution to amend the budget. So in that instance, we show what DOT has given us as an appropriation. We increase the revenue and we increase the expense. So it has zero impact on the taxpayer here in Hudson. Well, some of you pay state taxes, but it doesn't have any impact on the city budget. It's a negative. So we were getting the snowblower, the large snowblower that does the streets, and there was some pitting down here on the bottom, and it wasn't able to hold pressure that well. So we did contact the manufacturer, which is a Canadian manufacturer, and the replacement was, I think, $11,000. We, a local company that actually make, we gave them the specifications, and they built one for us for about $2,500. So hopefully we'll meet.
Rob, can you not cover your microphone, please?
Oh, okay. I didn't think I was. Hello?
Now we can hear you.
Okay. So the here we have, you know, this was a new tree that was planted by the owner on Front Street. And honestly, this is an ideal planting because it's offset. You know, there's a lot of times they want to put the trees up near the curb, and that, you know, that kind of beats the sweeper and some of the equipment as we, because a lot of our equipment runs close to the curb when we're plowing, things of that nature. So, you know, this is certainly a more desirable application having it set like that. Just a little quick thing on Promenade Hill, which is, you know, in a little bit of a hiatus. You know, I saw that there was on one of the blogs an aerial view, you know, which makes it look like, you know, the McDonald's arches, I guess. This is just, you know, what it looks like. And basically the reason there is it's a ramp, you know. You got a high spot here, you got a low spot here, and this is how you make the transition from high to low. So, you know, these are the grommets down here, these holes that will receive the railings. We're still having trouble getting the ship date on the railings, as well as the stone steps. We have received the pavers that will be the bottom kind of open area, the courtyard, I guess. I don't know, can't think of the area, what they call it. Anyway, we have that in stock, so, and we're waiting for National Grid to pull wire for the lights. So we do have, you know, kind of three components that are really outstanding, and it's holding up the rest of the project. Hopefully over the winter we can get those addressed and then get the project. And so last is Ferry Street, the PS&E, which is the plan, specifications, and estimates have been submitted to DOT. We do have a construction budget of about $2.9 million. You know, that is within the funding that we have through the TAC and through the STIP money from New York State. The right-of-way acquisition documents have all been submitted to the Terrace and New York State Real Property. NEPA, which is the Federal Environmental Review, had to be redone because there were delays in other processes, and so it kind of timed out. So that's been reapproved. You know, DOT had sent us about 32 comments 6-8 months ago, and we responded to them. 22 of them are resolved to their satisfaction. There are still 10 that are outstanding, but most of them are ministerial, like there's not a stamp or an engineer's signature, things like that, which they'll do that at the end once everything else is approved. I will have two resolutions before the council on this project next week. Both are under legal for review. One is a construction phase agreement with Amtrak. That's basically them telling us what we need to do as part of, you know, they're managing their tracks, their flaggers, things of that nature, and, you know, going to pay them. The other is the utility easement, and this is the picture of the easement. You know, we're going to have National Grid. Right now, a lot of these poles are up here. They run alongside or over top of the existing bridge. The footprint of the new bridge is significantly wider, and so these poles have to be reset and moved. A bunch of them are on city property, which is no big deal. We already have, you know, they're within the center line, right of way. So this one will be over on the other side of the fence of Amtrak's property. So those documents for your consideration next week, and then the mayor can execute them, and we can start checking boxes up. We are looking forward to getting this project out on the streets within either January or February. And this should be a 2022 project. So it's been a long time coming. You know, you're dealing with two railroads and the state of New York DOT, but we're, you know, we're getting there. As far as for more specific than I just go on here, there's a kind of a public participation meeting this Wednesday. And that's really, you know, the engineers will go through a greater detail, you know, some of the other options that kind of have come up, some of the history. And it'll, you know, be an opportunity if people from the public want to ask some questions directly to them. And
Rob, there are some design choices to be made as well about lights and things like that.
Yeah, I mean, there's different types of blocks that, right, for the retaining walls. So, you know, we're just trying to get an idea of a direction of. There are some on display at the mock-ups are on display in the library. They've been there for like a month now. Okay. So there's some big poster boards there, but there's also some pictures attached, I believe, to the link, the meeting link.
Yep.
You can look at the materials. I mean, to say that there's options there, yeah, you can choose some of the styles of the block for the retaining wall. Some of the styles for the lights are pretty much set because Amtrak won't accept anything that doesn't face down for a light because it has to, otherwise it could be considered as a signal. You know, they're, like I said, between CSX and Amtrak and DOT, there's not a whole lot to really kind of choose, but there are some kind of options. Mm-hmm. So, and that we'll be discussing that as Wednesday as well.
Okay. Council members, any questions for Rob? Nothing from council? Okay, Bill, remember, let's keep it civil.
Hey, Rob, I heard you say, I believe last month or the month prior, that you were glad that the city wasn't in the sidewalk business because of how expensive it is to replace sidewalks. But DPW is in the curb cut or ADA ramp business. Is that accurate?
If whenever we use CHIPS money, New York State Department of Transportation requires that we, anywhere that we put a new road down, that we also make it ADA accessible. So it's a requirement from New York State Department of Transportation.
So I'm going to take one intersection example. 8th Street and Warren. There's no curb cuts on either one of those side of 8th Street at the end there.
That's
Warren.
Right. We didn't pave that street.
No, I totally understand. Who's responsible for putting, I mean,
the adjacent property owner is.
Really?
Yes.
But you guys maintain the curb ramps. I've seen your guys sweeping off the snow. Why do you bother?
We shovel the access for crosswalks, yes.
The
on the street.
Ramp. The curb ramps.
Yes.
Okay.
So why are you maintaining them if it's the responsibility of the landowner there?
Well, usually the landowner shovels their sidewalk and we just clear the access to the road.
But why are you sweeping it?
Because they're good guys.
It's not your responsibility. Why are you touching it? I don't understand.
We're removing the snow on the street. If we get someone, if we remove some from the sidewalk, then so be it. We want pedestrians to be able to move around.
No, but I have seen every winter your guys are out there clearing the curb ramps.
You're welcome.
What's that? Why are you guys doing that?
Okay, Bill.
We're nice guys, Bill.
Yeah. That's what I just
said. Because you're nice guys. So,
okay, that's enough of that. Let's see. So that's it.
Thank you, Tom.
Excuse me? Oh, wow. Okay. Any other questions for Rob? I don't see anything. Okay, we can move right along. Thank you, department heads, and for your reports.
Thank you.
Let's see. Okay, let's go to resolutions. Shaheem, are you ready? Where are they? Oh, yep. Yeah. Okay, the first resolution. This is a resolution that's been in play for quite some time now. It's just to straighten up our policy. This came about after I talked to NICOM about how to deal with this unusual situation of having 10 Democrats on the council. Can I have an introduction, please?
I'll introduce.
Thank you, Tiffany. A second, please.
I'll second it, Jane.
Thank you, Jane. Okay. I'm sorry, who's that?
Dominic?
Yes.
So are we going to have a discussion or are we just going to...
Go ahead. If you want to talk about it, go ahead.
Well, I just think that maybe a change, including the NOP, I think that if somebody is elected, we do have a lot of NOPs in the city, that to exclude that as a minority, I don't think we should do that.
Okay.
I think
Thank
that...
it's not it a party, be, but I think by definition, it's not a party.
But what we're doing is making a policy. It doesn't mean that,
correct,
you know, we're excluding someone and we're punishing somebody that is duly elected and can't represent. And I think that that part should be just amended that to include the NOP.
Okay. Ryan, did you want to say something?
Correct me if I'm wrong. Even if we were to pass this, doesn't the incoming council, starting in January, have the right to adopt its rules of order to include or exclude this?
No. I mean, the rules of order will be presented, and they can be amended, but
right, it doesn't exactly change at that time. So, yeah, that's no. So that answers my question, which is, even if this goes in, we can choose in 2022 to not adopt this as part of how...
That's possible, yes.
Thank you.
But also, Tom, in terms of the selection of majority leader, that is done by the caucus.
Correct.
Separately from the council. Nothing of this is done in front of the council as part of the council, correct?
You mean if everybody's a Democrat... and we decide to pick minority and majority, it will be done in caucus, correct?
Correct.
A closed caucus, in fact.
And you would have to be invited if you're a non-member of the party.
That's true. You wouldn't be able to vote, but you could come. Okay. Margaret Morris would like, a community member would like to speak.
Yes, Tom, thank you. As an incoming council member, and I've, you know, attending meetings over the last multiple years, we have a situation here where people can run on multiple lines.
Yes.
Right? So it is rather unclear to me as to what party people actually belong to.
I think if you read the resolution, you'll see the answer to that.
Well, if you would scroll up, I could see more of the resolution.
Well, I don't have the ability to scroll. Thank you. And yes, it was posted in time.
Yes, thank you. So what I would like to suggest, and it may be something that the next council might want to consider, given the situation that we have where people can run on multiple lines, I would suggest that at the beginning of a council session, of a term, that people designate whether or not they are Democrats or not Democrats, because basically Democrats are the majority. Democrats are going to be the majority and non-Democrats are not the majority. And people have to pick whether they are majority or minority, whether you are a Republican, no party, working family party, whatever. If you're not a self-declared Democrat, then you are a minority person. And I would suggest that council members decide whether they're in the majority or not in the majority. And if you're in the majority, you get to weigh in on the majority lead. And if you are not in the majority, you get to weigh in on the minority lead. And that there is no overlap. There's no, you know, oh, I ran on three lines, therefore I can vote in two sessions. I just, you know, it's so
Nobody does that.
Can you let me finish?
But nobody does that.
Tiffany, please.
He's just talking. Nobody does that. Who does that? Can you give an example? Nobody does that.
Please let me finish. So I just, all I'm saying is, I would like to see us starting out with, decide, are you majority, aka Democrat, are you not majority, and then you get to weigh in the majority caucus or the minority caucus, and that's clean. And it's simple, and that's what I would like to see happen.
Well, I'm not sure I understand what you said at all, because it's in this resolution that your party membership is determined at the commencement of the most recent election cycle. So I don't see how that, what you're saying, has any relationship to that.
It does, Tom.
It does not.
It doesn't, but... let's move along. Ron Kapnippy,
Tom, I'm sorry, Tom.
Making sense, Margaret. I'm sorry.
Suggestion doesn't mean the council is going to go move forward it.
Yes, we're going to move forward. Ronald, you're speaking next.
Yes, thanks. First of all, just as a matter of clarification, eligibility for a minority or majority leadership depends on party registration, not on how many lines you may run on.
Thank you, Ron, and that's
okay.
Clear.
Now, what I would like to say is I agree absolutely with Alderman Morante that not being registered in a party should not disqualify you from either of these positions, especially the minority leadership. If the point is to have a minority viewpoint represented, someone who is not registered in the party might be the best representative of a minority viewpoint, especially, say, if you had 10 Democrats and one no party.
Mm-hmm.
Second, I also wonder why this procedural matter is being brought before the outgoing council now, as opposed to being brought before the incoming council at the beginning of the new council term in January.
So that
the organizational meeting, which has been the practice at least since I've been monitoring the
correct
council meetings.
And the idea is that we have this in...
One of the council members brought it up.
Thank you.
Well, but traditionally, at least in my experience, and I would be grateful not to be interrupted, at least since 2019 or so, 2018, this matter of the choice of majority and minority leaders was decided, was brought up, at the organizational meeting in January, at the beginning of the new council term, before the new council. The new council is going to be picking the majority and minority leaders. I think this matter should be brought before them, as it has been for the last several years, and not before the outgoing council at this time.
As Ryan made clear, this will be part of the rules of order that are proposed in January, and that council will then decide whether they want it to continue to be part of the
council. But then why is it even being brought up now?
So that, to avert the possibility that there will be a lot of confusion about it in the future.
Well, I didn't see any possibility for confusion.
Okay, if you have been at organizational meetings in the past, you'll know that there was a lot of confusion.
Well, I've observed them. In 2020, there was a great deal of controversy about this matter, I think justifiably. However, this past January in 2021, there was absolutely no controversy whatsoever.
Okay.
About the procedure.
Well, thank you. We're going to move along. Next resolution, please, Shaheen. Okay. This is a resolution authorizing the mayor to execute a memorandum of understanding accepting donations from the Friends of Hudson Youth. Can I have an introduction, please?
I'll introduce Ryan.
Ryan, thank you. A second, please.
I'll second.
Jane, thank you, Jane. Any conversation? Okay, next resolution, please, Shaheen. Yes, and this, as we've done in the past, this authorizes the acceptance of donations to the youth department from the Friends of Hudson Youth. And they'll be accepting up to $125,000. A introduction, please.
Introduction.
Malachi.
Ryan, and a second by Malachi. Thank you, gentlemen. Next resolution, please, Shaheen. Okay, this is a simple, in order to proceed with the bridge connectivity project, this declares the city as the lead agency in regard to SEAKR. Can I have an introduction, please?
Ryan.
Ryan, and a second, please.
Jane.
Second. I think Jane beat you, Tiffany.
Tiffany, you can do it.
Moving along. Next resolution, please. Now, as you know, on your desk for quite a while now has been the Affordable Housing Development Plan produced by Hudson Valley Pattern for Progress. This is a resolution that accepts the plan.
I'll introduce.
Tiffany, thank you. A second.
I'll second it, Rebecca. Malachi.
We'll give it to Malachi.
Sure.
The next resolution was referred to by Heather. And this is to begin the process to proceed with the turnkey light project under NYPA's Energy Services Program.
I'll introduce Tom.
Ryan, do I have a second?
I'll second Tom.
Thank you, Malachi. The next resolution accepts funds, $800, from the Columbia County when they used our Central Station firehouse.
Yep. I'll introduce Tom. This was from the COVID thing, I think.
Yes, correct. Yep. Ryan, and a second, please. Someone?
I'll second.
Malachi. The next resolution authorizes a transfer of funds to cover the city's retirement contribution.
Yep, I'll introduce.
Ryan. And a second, please.
I'll second him on a roll.
Thank you, Malachi. The next resolution is further concerning the NIPA project. And this is the Master Cost Recovery Agreement with NIPA. Can I have an introduction, please?
I'll keep going, Tom.
Okay. And a second.
I'll second.
Thank you, Malachi. And the next resolution is the bond resolution that Heather also talked about.
Yep. This is the 3 out of 4. You can put me down for this one too, Tom.
Thank you, Ryan.
And, I'll do this one.
Oh, and Jane jumps right in there to second.
Yes, absolutely.
You obviously want to go. Bond. You're obviously looking forward to go to City Hall tomorrow.
I am.
And the last resolution is also related to the Affordable Housing Development Plan, and the request for qualifications that's being issued as we after we pass this resolution. Do I have an introduction?
I'll introduce it, Rebecca.
Thank you, Rebecca. And do I have a second?
I'll second.
Ryan.
This is, and again, I think she's still on here. Michelle, great job on this presentation.
Yes.
At the meeting in November.
Yes, and you'll have time to read it further before we vote on it next week. As you know, we have 3 laws sitting on our desks, all of which we will be voting on next week. Shaheem, you can take the screen down. In the meantime, council members, any business you... Okay, Dominic Moranti would like to speak. Dominic.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Is Crystal still with us?
Yes, she is.
Crystal, welcome aboard. I'm going to ask for your opinion, if possible, for next week's, prior to next week's vote on the good cause eviction. We have conflicting reports in terms of legality between Beacon and other municipalities. So if you could be so kind on maybe researching that to see about the legality, I would really appreciate that.
Absolutely. It's something that I started digging into already because I knew it was going to be on your desks.
Great. Thank you. I like that.
Anyone else from the council members?
I mean, I'll get on my my every meeting shtick here of just a reminder for anybody that is looking for a booster shot right now. Columbia County Department of Health is running clinics down at the college, 3 to 6 p.m. on the 16th and 9:30 a.m. to 3 p.m. on the 17th. You can find the registration link on their website.
Ryan, I have a question about the potential of a second booster. I've read in some press reports that it might be a good idea to get a booster 3 months after your initial booster. And I'm wondering if there's a policy regarding that.
Nothing from the CDC yet. You know, I don't want to speak on behalf of the Department of Health, but I know that Director Mab very much follows what we get in guidance, both from the state as well as what comes out from the CDC. Both he and his team read that very diligently. So ultimately, I would say get through the holidays, and I think we're probably going to have a little bit more clarity on that. Just don't be like the guy, if anybody saw the story in the New York Post, who went out and got 10 shots in one day, you know, unbeknownst to the state that he did that in. You know, good luck to him and how he's feeling the next day.
Okay, then that's good guidance.
Let me remind Tiffany, Jane, Ryan, and Malachi and Rebecca to go to City Hall tomorrow and sign the various resolutions. Any comments from the public?
Tom, this is Peter Bujano.
Oh, hi, Peter.
Hello, everyone. Just a question on the parking feasibility, Empire State Development,
possible resolution to move that forward with the fee of $250. Can that be put on the agenda?
For next week?
Yes.
Absolutely. Can you send me an email so I can make sure it gets on?
Yes.
Thank you.
Peter, related to that, let me know if we need to update the timeline. I don't believe so, because I think we always planned for it to be issued immediately after the formal meeting. But if you could double check, that would be great.
I will do that. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Okay.
Tom?
Yes.
Maybe since you mentioned City Hall, maybe you should just advise the public regarding the limited availability by appointment, I believe, for City Hall, limited access.
Yes.
Right now.
So. On the City Hall website, you can read the full instructions, but access to City Hall has been has returned to the way it was last year. You need to call if you want to make an appointment, although you can call from outside the building and they will let you in. You have to wear a mask.
Could you look into the duties of the dog officer regarding minimizing putting in the poop bags in the stations rather than DPW?
I will check into that indeed. Poop bags.
Refills of poop bags.
Yep. Do you know how many stations offhand there are around the city? I've noticed two or three. I wonder who would know that. Rob's not here anymore, I don't think, so he wouldn't know. I mean, he would know, but he's not here.
You can email him.
Yeah. Anybody else before we end up here?
And I noticed one thing. Like, we've been getting reports from everybody else. Did we mention a report from the dog officer tonight?
No, we usually get that at our formal before we pay his bill. I have a hand up from Michael Hoffman.
Yeah, thank you, Tom. I just wanted to make note to the council that the resolution that you saw today about the New York Power Authority master cost recovery agreement, we don't have the actual agreement yet because I had to make some small changes to it, and that meant it got kicked to their legal team for review. So you'll be getting that from me directly before the formal on Tuesday. So look out for an email from me for that agreement.
Thank you, Michael. Rebecca, did you have your hand up for some reason, or did you decide not to speak?
Oh, I just wanted to say something about how I'm still really wishing that code enforcement would ever report to the council. just a lingering desire that I have to understand what's going on with code enforcement on a monthly basis, but that's all. And I guess I'll just, since I had my hand up, I'll just say, bye everybody. Thanks.
And, Crystal, I hope that wasn't too, disillusioning a first meeting. But this is how we roll here in Hudson.
So, with everyone.
Do I have a motion to adjourn?
I have a motion to adjourn on that one, because this is how we roll.
And that was seconded by Ryan. All in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed?
Aye.
With no opposition, this meeting
is like two eyes.
Over.
Everybody.
Thank you all.